Welcome to the Best of Times podcast. My name's John Doran. Over the coming months, I'm going to be talking to people about some of the best and worst times they've been through, and hopefully find out how these experiences have made them who they are today. So far, I've spoken with Sleaford Mods, The Specials, Rasheen Murphy and Kristin Hirsch. Today's guest is Mavis Staples. Mavis was born in Chicago in 1939, and from an early age, she was the voice that pushed the Staple Singers, the world's most successful gospel group, to international fame. From the late 50s onwards, the group started incorporating hard-hitting social themes into their songs, and from 1963, they were essential figures in the American Civil Rights Movement. In a long and storied career, she has sung for Barack Obama and worked with Prince, Curtis Mayfield, and Jeff Tweedy. She has a new album out, We Get By, in May, shortly before her 80th birthday. Mavis, yes. Tell me about the best of times.
Oh, the best of times. You know, John, I've been around a long time. Now, you know, I've had a lot of best of times. A lot of them. But I'll tell you the one that really... really got me was when Barack Obama won the election for president, black president, something that I thought I wouldn't live to see. And in fact, I didn't think it would even ever happen. But thanks to Dr. Martin Luther King, listen, and I stayed home. They were the family, Barack and his wife, the children, they were all in Chicago. And they had this big rally at Grant Park. So I had the television on. I was watching. When they announced he made it, I lost it. I was at home alone. I jumped up. I walked through my house. I started talking to Dr. King. I was talking to my father. Dr. King, we did it. He won. And then I cried a bucket of tears. I was pitiful. I was happy. And I was, you know, the fact that here is a black man. And then, you know, Barack, he was so cool. He was so, when I first saw him, but when I saw him walk in the street, I said, Sam Cooke is back. You know? He reminded me so much of Sam Cooke. The walk was the same. And he had this swagger in his walk. I said, oh, we got a cool president, you know? And I have just admired he and Michelle. Michelle, last month, sent me her book. I appreciate the fact that we had a black president in the White House, and he did very well. I think he did good. He did some good things. I hated it so bad. They just wouldn't allow him to do what, they wouldn't pass anything that he wanted done. I think we'd be much better off had they not been so, because there wasn't just this one that's in there now that didn't like him. A lot of them didn't like him, and they didn't like the fact that a black man was in that White House. But I'm just grateful that we had that time. I don't think it'll ever happen again, but I shouldn't say that because I didn't think that it would ever happen that time. But what we have now is everybody has a gun, you know, and they're just shooting. They don't know. They shoot people that they don't even know this person. You know, they walk past a car. If there's someone sitting in the car talking, they shoot, you know, and he brings that on with what he says, you know, the way he speak. And it makes people think, oh, we can do anything we want to do, you know. And another thing is it's brought more hatred and bigotry back into the world, you know. It was ceasing. If things were getting better, things had gotten better. But now it started all over again. We had some people in Charlottesville. You know, you just don't, I can look at the news and I think I'm back in the 60s. You know, these guys that were marching in Charlottesville with torches, when I saw that, my heart jumped, you know. And then I saw they weren't the average bigotry person. They weren't the average hatred. You looked at them and they were college students. They looked like college students. They didn't, you know. I said, how is this happening? Has the people been teaching their children about this? You know, teaching them to be this way? And I can't stop. I've got to continue to sing my songs and get the message out there. You know, my father would tell the songwriters, if you want to write for the Staple Singers, read the headlines. We want to sing about what's happening in the world today. And maybe we can sing a song to try to fix it, you know. So I can't stop with what I'm doing. I'm the only voice that's still here from the movement. Well, we have Congressman John Lewis, and we have Congressman Andrew Young, but they're in Congress. They're not marching. They're not speaking. They speak when they get a chance, but we don't have a leader like Dr. King was, you know. So I just said, well, I can't, I have to keep going. I have to keep my father's legacy alive and keep Dr. King's legacy alive. And I'm going to sing my freedom songs and protest songs for as long as I have my voice. You know, I'm sorry, I'm not giving you a chance to ask me anything.
No. I'm happy to shut up, to be honest.
You're happy to shut up?
Yeah. What was it like singing at the White House for Barack Obama?
Oh, it was beautiful. It was just, you know, I was so proud. I was just so proud. Like Jane Brown said, I'm black and I'm proud. You know, I was so proud. It was just awesome. I said, we have, and I went one time for, it was a Memphis setting that he had. He had Booker T and Steve Cropper, all of Sam Moore. We were singing all the Memphis stuff, you know. And Barack and Michelle are sitting right down in front of you. And I said, I'm not going to look at them, because if I I'm going to look another way. I'm not going to look at them. I'll forget my words to my song. But it was beautiful. They smiled all the way through. And then I was invited back to the White House for Kennedy Center Honors. And Bonnie Raitt, this is where your friends sing your songs and they tell a story about you. And I was sitting right next to Michelle, and Obama was on the other side of her, you know. And This is an honor. This is quite an honor. If you get asked to the White House for Kennedy Center Honors, I had been there about three times singing for my friends. I sang for Paul McCartney. I sang James Taylor, and I sang one of the Beatles songs. Then I went back, I sang for Al Green. And this time, they were singing for me. Bonnie sang for me. She sang, Will the Circle Be Unbroken? And L. King, she sang, Respect Yourself. They just did a whole bunch. And then they showed this film of my life, my family, and what we had done. It was great. It was just great. These are times that I will cherish for the rest of my life. I will cherish the fact that we, as a black people and white, because everybody white is not bad. The white had to vote for Barack Obama for him to get in there, you know, so it had to be both of us. And I will cherish the fact that I was here, I witnessed it, and I'm just so grateful. I'm so blessed, you know.
Mavis, can you tell me about the worst of times?
The worst of times. was when, what year was that? 1962, I believe, or 63. My family and I, we were in Mississippi, and I was the night driver. We had performed in Jackson, Mississippi. And I would drive 200 miles, then I was gonna drive another stretch of 200 miles. And I got to Memphis, Tennessee. 3rd and Union, I'll never forget the street. I was on 3rd and Union. I pulled in a service station to get gas, and this tall, young white boy came out to the car, and he put the gas in, and when he finished, he came to get his money. I asked him, well, do you wash the windshield? Because all these bugs are on the windshield. And he looked at me a long time, and then he snatched a rag, and he started wiping, you know. And then he came to get paid again. And I asked him to give me a cash receipt. And he looked at me and then he said, N-word, if you wanted a cash receipt, you come over to the office. And so now Pops told me, and Pops said, Mavis, pull over there. This guy, I'm sure he thought my father was an old man because Pops had white hair, you know, but he's had white hair from 18 years old. Premature white hair. And my brother was on the back seat covered with coats. He didn't know that man was in the car. He thought, but he could see my sister and I and my father. So I think that's what he was thinking. This is just an old man and two ladies. So he thought he was going to get away with saying what he wanted. Pops told me to pull over there. I pulled over. Pops went in, and I'm sure he was asking, why would you call my daughter out of a name like that? And Pops was talking. Then all of a sudden, I saw him shaking his finger in Daddy's face like that. And Pops clocked him, hit him, knocked him down. And they fought. They fought over into the grease part of the service station. And he picked up a crowbar. Well, Cleety, my sister, she jumps out of the car. She beating him in the back and beating, because Pop slipped down. He had his house slippers on. And he slipped down and he was on the ground. And all of a sudden, when Cleety was hitting him in the back, he broke away and started for his office. And that's when I said, Purvis, Purvis, they're fighting. Purvis came from under those coats like Superman. Come out of the telephone booth, you know. he came out, and he was in there before you could, I mean, and Purvis went up. I said, they fighting, Purvis. He went up, and he come down on this guy. And that's when the guy started running. He ran right behind. I almost backed up. I almost ran over. I was driving the getaway car. See, but Daddy, I hadn't planned to drive. When they all got back in the car, panting, and Purvis said, what happened? And Purvis said, we ought to go to the Lorraine Hotel. We was right around the corner from the Lorraine Hotel where Dr. King was assassinated. That's where all the black artists stayed. And Pop said, no, we're going home. We were on our way home. He said, no, we're going home. He said, drive, Mavis. I said, Pops, I can't drive no more. He said, Mavis, drive. And I started driving. And all of a sudden, I see these lights behind me. I told him, I said, Pops, there are three lights flashing behind me, three, and he said, just keep on across the bridge. Well, I was on this bridge, the bridge that divides West Memphis and Memphis, Tennessee, and West Memphis, Arkansas. So he said, get on across the bridge, maybe. I was so nervous, I didn't know what to do. This was a terrible time. I got across that bridge. When I got across the bridge, they jumped out of those cars with shotguns. Dogs were barking, and they put the guns on us, you know, and then they were telling us to put our hands over. We had our hands over our heads, standing out on the highway, cars zooming by, you know, and he said, oh, so you're gonna beat up a white man? Daddy said, officer, just take us to jail. What are you gonna do with us? He said, Where you come from? What y'all doing out here anyway? Baba said, we sing gospel records, gospel songs, and these are my children. and we sing gospel. He said, you can call WDIA. We record right here in Memphis on Stax Records. And Pops gave him all the names, Bless My Bones, Wade, all the disc jockeys' names, and everybody, Al Bell, you know, and they weren't hearing it. And they, my sister, you know, when she get in the car, she undo her jeans. So her jeans were trickling down. She put her hands down to pull her, and he put this gun. He said, you want to get shot, don't you? I told you, keep your hands up, put your hands. And she put her hands back up. It scared her, so she just got sick. And then he kept calling my father boy. That's what was getting me to. He said, this boy looked like he want to run. And they handcuffed him to the handle of the car. And then they went in our trunk. Well, they saw records. Daddy said, those are our records, but we sell it out. But the cigar box, the people in Jackson, Mississippi had paid us in a cigar box, cash money in a cigar box. And he said, oh, this is what we're looking for. This is what, see, because this guy told them that we didn't pay him and we beat him up. And see, that receipt is what saved us. When Pops went to get that receipt, it's because Pops said, that's our money, officer. Well, you get this money, boy. And Pops said, we sang for it tonight in Jackson, Mississippi. I tell you, we're gospel singers. And he said, well, I got to see what kind of singing you do to get this kind of money. And over, they took out what they took. And Pops had his little gun in the trunk, but it was in the trunk, and it was a registered gun. So they started putting handcuffs on us, putting them behind our backs, and put handcuffs on, and they started separating us, put us in three different cars. And I said, oh Lord, I'm not gonna see my mother again. I just knew they were taking us out in the woods to lynch us, you know. But they took us to jail. I've never been so happy to see a jail. Boy, I was so happy. 'Cause look, I have never been that scared in my life. And those dogs were barking, and they were so mean, you know. And we get in, the Pops got out the car first, they got him out. Pops walked in, we all handcuffed behind our back. We walking behind our father. He walked into this black man mopping the floor. This man looked up, he said, Papa Staples, what you doing here? And Daddy didn't say nothing, just kept walking. Then he looked, he said, and your children? Because we came on long after, and we laughed about that a lot after we were free. But we go in, and the chief come out. He said, all right, who gonna tell me what happened here? And Pop said, I'll tell you if you take me to another room. He still didn't want to say in front of me what all that guy said about me. And they took him to another room, and Pops told him about the receipt. He sent one of the policemen out, take my sister out to the car to get the receipt. Cleety come back in. This receipt was all bloody. Because Papa had beat that dude to a pulp. You know, when he hit him, he had this ring on. Blood flew when he first hit him, you know. So Pops had the receipt in his pocket, but he lost it out there somewhere, but the blood was on it. Cleety came in with the receipt. The receipt saved us. The fact that this guy told him that we had beat him up and didn't pay for our gas, they saw he was lying. The chief come out of there, he said, get them handcuffs off those people. Get them off. And then as time went on, they went, you know, Now, Dad Pops done told the chief everything that he told them, that we're singers. We got hiccup. I believe me and my wife saw y'all on Hoot Nanny. I believe me and my wife saw y'all on Johnny Carson. You know, all these different television. Percy, man, don't be trying to jive and joke and jive with us now. You done all you could do to hurt us, you know, and Purvis had gotten mad. My brother, when this vein come out of his forehead like that, stay out of his way. Get out of the way. So the chief told him, let us go home. And we got in the car, man. My sister Cleety, we had to keep stopping the car for her to throw up. You know, she was just sick. Made her stomach all nervous. But Purvis was driving in. I couldn't drive no more. And we got home that next morning. Staple Singers on the headline. Staple Singers beat up a white man. And my friends were, Mavis, your father beat up a white man? And I say, my father, my sister, and my brother beat him up. You know, I was tough then. But we go back. When we went back to Memphis, this is about 4 months later. We're in Memphis at the Mason Temple. You looked over to the right. See, he sent a note up there to Pops, the chief of police. He sent a note to Pops that they were there. We looked over there. It was like a little bleacher, you know, moved up. And the chief, and it looked like about 12 policemen all dressed all nice and white shirts and in their uniform. And Pops said, Chief, it's mighty nice of y'all to come out here to see us, but who's minding the town over there? You know, like, looked like every policeman was there. Anybody could have robbed a bank or anything over there. You know, Pop said, who's minding the town? People laughed because those people at that show, they knew that we had been in jail over there. It was just right across the bridge from Memphis. And boy, but that was my worst time. Now, that was a worst time. That was where I don't think we had some other incidents, but none of them was as bad as that. That was horrible.
How have these good times and bad times like affected who you are as an artist today?
Oh, okay. You know, they've affected me. It made me stronger. You know, you can't hurt me. You can't change my mind about what I want to do. You know, you heard that saying, what doesn't hurt me, what doesn't make you stronger. What doesn't kill you make you stronger. And that's me. That's me in the flesh. You know, I'm not going to give up. You can't do, and you can't, this man... Ben Harper, he has written some songs for me, man, that are just my life. It's everything that he is saying in these songs. You can't hurt me. You can't change my mind about what I want to do. Only thing you're doing is making me stronger. As you pick on me, you mess with me, you better kill me. Because if you don't kill me, I'm just going to be strong. I'm on the outcome. I'm coming back for you, you know. So you're just going to make me look better because I'm not going to allow you to hurt me. I'm not going to allow. And I fear no one. I fear no one but God. You know, he's the only one in control. You talk about me as much as you please. Buke me, scorn me, you know. You got, in order to stop me, you got to kill me, you know? So I'm strong. I'm powerful. You hear what you call on Nina cried power? He said, Mavis cried power. All right. So I'm proud. I'm proud. I can't stop. I've come too far. I've come too far to turn around. So you can't stop me, and I'm not going to allow you to stop me. So my 79 years that I've been singing my songs, it's only made a better person out of me. I'm a good person. I do unto others as I would have them do unto me. Just be kind. Be nice, and you'd be surprised at how far that'll take you. But mine all come from the fact that my father started me singing when I was 8 years old, and I loved it. My voice, my God-gifted voice, it's a gift. I don't know what key I sing in. I don't know music. I've never had any music lessons, but my God gave me this, and I'm going to use it the way I feel like he wants me to use it, and that's to help somebody. That's to help us get along in the world, come together, love one another. You can't lose. You can't lose like that.
The first thing you see when you look at your new album is this kind of incredible old photograph taken by Graham Parks. And I was wondering if you could just briefly describe what people will see on this photograph and what this photograph represents to you.
You know, I saw those little girls. I had about seven of those pictures in front of me. That was one that grabbed me, grabbed my eye, and that I had to have it. That's the one. These are six little black girls on the outside looking in. They want to be in the playground, but they can't be in the playground. They want to swing, and they want to ride on the slide, but and I thought about myself and my sisters. We used to be in the same, we wanted to ride the slide. We wanted to go to the beach and swim or go to the swimming pool. And we couldn't do it because we were black. And I said, I got to have that. That's got to be the album cover. I Gordon Parks, and I love his work anyway. You know, he was beautiful. But that picture drew me to. It didn't take no time. I was looking at about seven or eight of them, and I saw that one. I said, "That's the one. That's the one," because I knew what it was about. I knew right away that these babies wanted to be on the other side of that fence, you know, where they could swing and ride on the slide board, be in the playground. It's a playground. And then, and like I say, it reminded me of us. My mother used to dress us in little short dresses and braid our hair like that with bow ribbons on our hair. That was us. That was me and my sisters back in the day when we couldn't go on the other side of the fence. Yeah.
I was thinking about your first single, Uncloudy Day, and is it true that before people really got to know the Staple Singers, they couldn't believe that a 14-year-old girl could be singing this?
They would either say, because the disc jockeys would say, "This is little Mavis Staple, 14 years old." People would say, "That ain't no little girl. That's got to be a man or a big fat woman. That ain't no girl." And look, we would drive. See, the record was so hot. I was still in school, you know, and Pop, we would start driving to be somewhere on a Sunday to sing. And we would go to places like Atlanta, Georgia, Durham, North Carolina, New Orleans. These people, the disc jockey would announce it, that I was a little girl. They would have bet. By the time we got to the place, they would have bet that I was not a little girl. And so we would fool them. On Cloudy Day, you know, we sing it down in harmony. All of us sing together. And then I come with a, "Well, well, well, oh, Lord, they tell me now." And so they would be waiting on it. So what we fool them, my brother would step up like he was going to say it. And you'd hear the people, "I told you that wasn't no little girl. I told you that wasn't no little girl." And by the time I'm into the mic, I'm saying, "Well, well, well." And they would go crazy. One man just got mad at me. "Little old girl, I bet my whole paycheck on you." Pop told me, "Well, you shouldn't bet. You shouldn't bet." There she is. And I was just a little skinny girl, knock-kneed. And I was short. I was still short, but I was short for my age, you know. We would have so much fun, boy, we'd have fun. They would actually bet that I was not. But see, my voice comes from my mother's side of the family. My mother and her mother, they had strong voices. And I would get in fights. I would fight all the time because the kids would say, "You sound like a boy. You sound like a boy. Well, I'll show you a boy. You keep that, keep talking about I sound like a, I sound like, and my music teacher, I wanted to be in the a cappella choir. Well, I was in the a cappella choir in school, and Mr. Fitch, he was always picking on me. Mavis, you're singing with the boys. You're singing with the boys. You're in the basement. You're in the basement. You should be. I said, Dr. Finch, I can't sing up there. I can't. And he kept on me so much, I left the a cappella choir. I just got out of the choir because I wanted to sing in the choir, but he wanted me to sing soprano. And I couldn't, I could go up high, but I couldn't sing soprano. That's my sister, Cleetie, you know. So those were my times with my voice. I loved so much when we would go on the road, and I loved to order down for breakfast on room service. I would call the room service, and don't you know, anytime I called, they said, "Yes, Mr. Staples, can I get you something else, Mr. Staples?" Yeah. And I let it ride for a long time, and I started saying, I'm a lady. You know, and they said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." Yeah, Mr. Staples. But my voice is not as heavy as it used to be. See, when I was a kid, I was talking like this, okay. my voice was just heavy. I was in school, but you know, when you walk into school down the gravel highway, the jukeboxes are already lit up. And they was just playing, "You made me leave my happy home." And that song, I would hear it every morning. I learned it, and they were having a variety show at the school, and I didn't want to be in it, but the kids pushed me on stage. They pushed me out on stage, and that's what came out of my mouth. Well, here come my uncle. The school was from elementary to high school. He was 16 years old. He coming around the wall, and I saw him. I thought he was coming to pat me on my head and tell me I was doing a good job, you know. He snatched me off that stage. Pushed me out, took me all the way out to school. Took me to my grandmother's house. Got to grandmother's house, and he pushed me in the door and told her, "This youngin' is up at the schoolhouse singing the blues." And she said, "Oh, you singing the blues, huh? You get out there and get me some switches." I came back in the house. I said, "Grandma, I can't find no switches." He said, "Oh, you don't want me to go get them switches. You don't want me to have to go." And she went, sent me again. I brought these switches in. She tore my little legs up. "You don't sing no blues in this family. You sing church songs." But nobody had ever told me what to sing. You know, I just love to sing. And I started printing letters home to my mother. I told her I want to come home because grandma won't let me sing. And she hitting me with these pieces of wood. And I didn't know what you called them, switches. I don't think I could spell switches. That's what it was. I couldn't spell it. And once I got home that time, I didn't go back. And after years, had to move my grandmother to Chicago with us, and she lived with us. And I had recorded "Since I Fell for You." So I passed by her room one day. I said, "Grandma, well, come on up in the living room. I want to show you something." She said, "Okay, baby, here she come." And I had it on the record player, and I put the needle on, and I go, "You made me leave my happy home." And she said, "You little old bugger, you didn't forget that, did you?" I said, "No, ma'am, but you can't put me now. You can't whip me. And don't you know, I have some switches. They talk, I got in a vase at my house." And people come in, I said, "Mabel, what you doing with this?" I said, "That's my grandmother. Don't mess with them. That's my grandmother." Yes, indeed. I don't want to forget it. I don't want to forget. So I tell you, I have had a life. I'm telling you, I wouldn't take nothing. And I'm living my best life right now. Right now. You know, I've had a wonderful life.
What are you doing for your 80th birthday?
Oh, you saw me riding that skateboard, didn't you? I'm riding the skateboard. Yeah, I'm gonna be riding that skateboard. But Ben Hopper, I told him on the skateboard, I said, Ben, you scared me. You go up this thing, then you turn around, you go back that way. And you, he said, Mavis, there's a piece of cake. Ain't nothing to it. I said, okay, I wanna ride it.
All right.
He said, I'll help you ride it. I'll show you how. I said, okay, you gonna see me on the skateboard. And you're going to say, Mavis told the truth. She's on the skateboard, 80 years old. And see, I have gone from 8 to 80. I started at 8, and on July 10th, I will be 80 years old. I'm having 3 parties. Yeah. So I tell you, I'm going to be around. I'm not going anywhere. I'll be around. You. Next time you see me, you come see me when I'm 90.
Right.
Yeah, when I'm 90, I'm going to be just as frisky.
You have been listening to The Best of Times with me, John Doran, brought to you by Lush and The Quietus. This podcast was produced and engineered by Andrew Payne and co-produced by James Shakeshaft. The theme music is by Oh The Guilt. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe, give us a star rating, tweet about us and tell your friends and family. Thanks for listening. We'll be back soon with more Best of Times.